Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with us now is Christian Amanpour, Chief International Correspondent for CNN and Global Affairs Anchor for ABC News, to discuss President Obama's decision after all this time to begin sending arms to the Syrian rebels. We'll also talk about Election Day today in Iran. Christian, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be back with you, Brian.
Why now on Syria, Christian?
You know what? It's a really good question. We have been reporting, and I've done firsthand reporting from Syria in terms of talking to the officials there about the conclusive proof of chemical weapons having been used. And we've had that in the last few weeks, matched to the British and the French, who have publicly also said that they've had conclusive proof that Assad has used that. Why now? I suppose because you can see that the balance of power has shifted radically in favor of the Assad regime on the ground. They, backed by Iranian-funded and operated Hezbollah, have taken back a key town, Qusair, near Homs, and they are poised to take back Aleppo. This would deal a crushing, perhaps final blow to the opposition. At the same time, also, the opposition has told the administration, and they've told me even last night, that unless the balance of power on the ground changes, there will be no Geneva peace talks. Now, these are the much-touted so-called peace talks that Secretary of State Kerry has proposed along with his Russian counterpart, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov.
And that was such a big deal, getting Russia, which has backed Syria,
right,
on board for this.
Right, exactly. But the question is, we don't even know what the administration is proposing. They haven't given any details as to what weapons they're proposing. What the opposition needs are heavy weapons. They need anti-tank and anti-aircraft weapons. And all they have right now, for the most part, are AK-47s, you know, machine guns and RPGs and the like. So they're heavily outgunned on the ground. And unless they get something really, you know, worthwhile, they're going to continue to be heavily outgunned.
And listeners, if you want to call in and comment or ask Christian Amanpour a question about the decision to arm the Syrian rebels or the elections in Iran today, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I suspect, and as kind of you indicated, that officially crossing the red line of chemical weapons is the reason. But that's official. It's really because Assad started winning the war again, just
right,
when the U.S. and Russia were hoping his weakness would bring him into the negotiating table. You know, now his army started turning it around, and the U.S. feels more compelled to intervene.
Well, yes, but I would be very careful before saying intervening. I mean, I'm not going, you know, whole hog on this because I don't think they've said anything. I think this is an incredibly incremental move. They haven't spelled out exactly what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just another bunch of ammunition and small weapons, yeah,
yeah,
that'll be very useful,
uh-huh,
but it won't change the balance of power on the ground. So I'm not even going to say they're going to arm the rebels because
right,
they haven't even said that. Maybe they will. You know, there was a lot of sort of breaking news yesterday that perhaps they would, you know, talk about a no-fly zone,
yes,
but that is also not on the cards
right
at the moment. We'll see.
Well, can I ask about your own feelings about this? Because you're here as a journalist to analyze these developments for us. But when I saw you and Bobby Ghosh from Time Magazine on ABC This Week recently, I thought the two of you were practically pleading with President Obama through your analysis to really intervene to help stop the slaughter of innocents because it's been so rampant. Do you want to express an opinion about the necessity?
I certainly will. But what I'd like to say also is that I am not one of those opinion-based journalists, nor do I take political or ideological views. What I do, which is very different from most people who are talking about this, is report based on firsthand experience and having covered these things in the past. I would say the closest comparison to what's happening in Syria today is what we covered so extensively through the 90s, which happened in Bosnia and then in Kosovo. And that was a war in which the state, which was deemed by the West to be in the wrong, had much, much heavier weaponry and was slaughtering its people. And for the longest time, the U.S. and its Western allies stayed out of Bosnia. It took multiple massacres and millions of refugees to get the U.S. involved. And when the U.S. did get involved, it was a very effective and quick end to the war, and it did not involve boots on the ground at all. So I have seen the way this can work, and I believe strongly, based on firsthand factual reporting, not on opinion, not on pleading, not on any kind of bleeding heart, but on a moral and strategic level, that this can and should have been dealt with. Because why is it a problem now? Because so long has the U.S. and its Western allies left it to fester that not only has the unconscionable number of 90,000 plus, and that's a low estimate, people being killed over the last 2 years, but they have seen their worst-case scenarios come to bear. In other words, Iran is heavily involved, Hezbollah is heavily involved, all on the Assad side. And because the U.S. has not in any meaningful or material way supported the moderates who they said they wanted to support, then, of course, the extremists have gotten the upper hand, and they're being supported and armed by the kinds of unsavory people that neither you nor I nor the administration would like to see have any, you know, meaningful say in Syria. This is all happening because the U.S. has stood on the sidelines. And by the way, it was President Obama who set the line from the beginning, saying Assad must go. That's our policy. And has done absolutely nothing to make that happen.
And do you think it's kind of absurd in a way that the official reason for taking the step is that Assad used chemical weapons to kill 100 people, but maybe the real reason should be that he used conventional weapons to kill 100,000 people?
Well, again, Brian, it's really interesting to know why they've done at this time this, talking about the red line, talking about the change of calculus. I'm waiting to see whether this means that they're going to have more talks with allies, more talks within the U.S. national security establishment, to see whether it will result in a proper arm and train program, which is what happened in Bosnia, or whether it'll result in a no-fly zone, which is what all the U.S. allies want, including Turkey and Jordan, not to mention all the other NATO allies. That's what they believe is the best way to go. Obviously, Russia doesn't agree with all of this. However, I think that, yes, I mean, look, 90,000 people have been killed. I don't know what to tell you. It is a moral failure, but it's equally a strategic failure of the United States, because what's happened is this cautious view has allowed the worst-case scenario to unfold in Syria. And by the way, nobody who believes in arming and training believes that Americans should put boots on the ground. So that is just a straw man, you know, and a red herring by those who oppose any intervention.
Although I want to play you a clip of Senator McCain yesterday. I'm sure you heard this. He's been the leading hawk on Syria, and he's not saying boots on the ground, but he may be saying bombs on the ground. Listen to Senator McCain.
These people of the Free Syrian Army need weapons and heavy weapons to counter tanks and aircraft. They need a no-fly zone, and Bashar Assad's air assets have to be taken out and neutralized.
Air assets have to be taken out and neutralized. He's talking about bombing runways
like that. That is standard operating procedure when you put up a no-fly zone. So that's standard operating procedure. And Senator McCain, and in fact, if you remember, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former CIA Director David Petraeus, and the Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, they were all on board for an arm and train and to bolster the help to the Syrian National Council and the Syrian Military Council. Thing is, it hasn't happened. So now we're at a place where these people have not had the weapons to defend themselves. So either they're going to go down and Assad is going to win, and then the U.S. will have to live with that if that's the chosen policy, or because they've been so late, they have to figure out what to do now to make sure that the balance of power is slightly shifted towards the opposition, who they apparently support, the U.S., to make any kind of possibility happen at any kind of peace conference. I mean, they've got themselves into a real bind here by sitting on the sidelines. And frankly, the big winner is Iran right now, Iran and Hezbollah. Is that really where the U.S. wants to be in Syria?
Talking about Syria, and we'll get to the elections in Iran today. Christiane Amanpour, chief international correspondent for CNN and global affairs anchor for ABC News. Our board is jammed with phone callers, and let's talk to Jim in Brookville. Jim, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan and a big, big fan of Ms. Amanpour. If you can hear me okay,
yep.
I hope.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to ask Ms. Amanpour, how far she thinks that this can go. We have seen escalations in the past. We have heard, our own leader say, this is as far as we're going to go. It's not going to go any further. And all of a sudden, we have God knows how many troops somewhere. What is the end game here? Is this it? Or do you think that we are going to go further? And thank you for taking my call.
Well, this is the question, and I think it's a legitimate question. I believe that they're going to continue to have more conversations and more sort of strategy sessions on where to go on this. This is an incremental shift from the Obama administration. As I say, we still don't know what exactly it means. But if they want to pursue the policy which President Obama himself outlined, 2 years ago, which is the preferred policy is to see Assad go. Now, if they've changed that policy and the U.S. is prepared to live with Assad, that's one thing. We haven't heard them say that publicly. But if they want to see the policy that they've espoused actually come to bear or have any kind of meaningful so-called peace conference, which they have planned and proposed for Geneva, then they're going to have to make sure that there's, any reason for the opposition to come to the table. And the only way the opposition says it's going to come to the table is if it has more weapons in order to change the balance of power on the ground. I do not believe ever you will see U.S. boots on the ground. I don't think anybody's calling for that. It's certainly not necessary.
Giovanni in Bedford-Stuyvesant, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for the letting me have a chance to express this opinion. I don't believe we should be involved in this Syrian situation at all. And I believe so basically because of some fundamental principles that are peculiar to our style of government. We understand it by a democracy. We would never stand for any kind of armed resistance to the government. Certainly, if you even go back and look in the recent years, Ruby Ridge, Waco, and other examples, they would be very forceful in quelling that situation. Secondly, we also stand for a government.
Well, it's hard to compare the United States to the Assad regime, though, right?
Well, no, that's true. But I'm just saying the reasons why we would get involved. This is a sectarian battle between two forces on both sides, the Shiite and the Sunni situation. What guarantee that we have anything, even in terms of current history, if the people and the Islamists on the other side get involved and take over, it's going to be any better?
Giovanni, that's a really important question. And Christiane, I think that has been President Obama's question and the root of his reluctance up until this point. Why not believe that more arms will just mean more war, more stalemate, more death?
Well, clearly that is the president's position, and that was his position all along. We don't want to add lethal weapons or lethal materiel in this situation. Now, though, they're seeing that they might need to do something. It's really a question of who do you want to see win? And I basically think that it has become a sectarian war because of the time that's elapsed and because of the inaction. And that's what's happened. It's developed into the worst-case scenario that all of us predicted it would if it was allowed to continue with this kind of inaction. What it started as, and it's important to remember this, it started with a couple of young people in the town of Deraa more than 2 years ago scrawling on a wall very peacefully that they wanted Assad to reform and maybe even step down. And what happened to them was that they were responded by real force by the Assad regime, and this is what happened. In the beginning, people were calling for reform. They weren't calling for Assad to step down. And his violent reaction is what has caused this to spin out of control. Now, chemical weapons have been used, something we have been reporting for weeks now. And that's a major line. I mean, that's a huge violation of international law when it comes to the laws of war. And not to mention, 90-plus thousand people have been killed in an area that's incredibly important for the U.S. and has immense strategic ramifications for the United States.
But where's everybody else? Why can't other countries take the lead and really take care of this when President Obama is trying to disengage us from two, questionably successful, complicated wars post 9/11, trying to shift our foreign policy focus to Asia, trying to end an era where the U.S. is involved in every Sunni-Shiite conflict, Arab on Persian on Arab on Jew, you know, because it doesn't always seem to be in everybody's interest.
Well, look, you know, again, that's a policy, that's a strategic decision. The idea that the United States can leave behind the Middle East and go to China and just let the Middle East go has obviously manifestly proven to be incorrect. The United States staying out of the Middle East, whether it's the Arab Spring countries or indeed Syria, has a material and dramatic effect. The U.S. is the only power that is, you know, trusted by many of these areas, that has the military connections with these countries, not to mention the economic connections, and that's how it's been. That's a long-time U.S. strategic reality and partnerships that have been the basis and the backbone of U.S. foreign policy. So that's one thing. The next thing is that it's not that the U.S. is getting involved in sectarian warfare. It's not that at all. It's that the U.S. needs to decide whether it is going to see its arch enemy or its antagonist, Iran, you know, be the winner here. And it has already been in Iraq. Many people will say Iran has been, you know, the big sort of winner in Iraq, and also because it's involved in Syria, is the big winner. So I just think that, you know, you have to look at the whole and decide what kind of a world you want. Now, you ask, why is it the U.S.? Because the U.S. leads NATO, and the U.S. has the only major assets that can actually lead this kind of operation. It doesn't have to do all the work. And, in fact, it doesn't when it goes into these operations. Yes. It has Arab partners, as it did in Libya. It has Turkey. It has Europe. It has all the other NATO countries. But the U.S. has the heavy lifting equipment, the biggest and the most advanced logistical equipment. The United States is a superpower, and that is the responsibility and the burden, I guess, of a superpower.
Of course, one of the ironies in Iraq, I think, is that Saddam Hussein, for all his faults and all his horrors, had been a bulwark against Iran. U.S. intervention created the conditions for Iran to become more powerful in that country. But I know we only have a few minutes, and that you want to talk about the other huge and very related story in the region today, which are the elections in Iran. Are they real elections?
Well, I think they are, you know, heavily stacked. In fact, I know they're heavily stacked. We all know they're heavily stacked. The candidates have been chosen and vetted by the system. But I think what we're seeing right now, according to reports that are coming out there and according to analysis that I've been getting out of there over the last few days, there's been a last-minute surge for the one member of the reform camp that was allowed to stay in, Rouhani, a former nuclear negotiator. He worked for the reformist president, Mohammad Khatami, and he knows how to deal with the West. And he is in a tight race, apparently, with the mayor of Tehran, Ghalibaf, who is connected with the Revolutionary Guards, very conservative and hardline. We'll see whether this goes into a runoff. But I think what's really important is that, for sure, the United States needs to have a constructive relationship with Iran, because Iran is a big power in the region. And if the two are at each other's heads and confronting each other, it's going to be, you know, very, very bad for the years to come.
And from what I've heard, Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, the religious leader, has been talking about turnout in this election as a way to defy the United States. And I'm curious if you think the U.S. is really such a big issue on people's minds there, rather than the Iranian economy or freedom of speech or women's issues or anything else domestic that directly affects their lives.
I would say the economy is their biggest concern right now, because of the sanctions and because of decades of mismanagement by the Iranian Islamic government. I think the U.S. is on their minds because they want to be friends with the United States. Mm. Whenever I go to Iran, people say, we want to have a better relationship with the U.S. We just do, and with the rest of the world. But they're not willing to sort of cry uncle and surrender under U.S. pressure. And I think that's something the United States needs to understand, that they should have a constructive relationship between these two countries, but beating them over the head, holding a sword to the throat, kind of won't work. And that's what's going to happen. That's what we're going to see happen. None of the Iranian candidates are willing to give up the notion of their right to enrich, you know, to abandon that right. And the question is, how do you work around that to make sure their nuclear program is not one that's deemed that's used for military purposes?
So last thing, Christiane, after the last election of Ahmadinejad was believed by many to have been stolen in 2009, a protest movement began, and that was before the Arab Spring began in Tunisia and Egypt and then spread through the region. But it's never really taken root back in Iran. Do you think this election could be a catalyst for that?
Let's wait and see. Let's see what happens if indeed Rouhani, the reform candidate, either goes to a runoff or people think that he's won. Let's see what happens, after that. Clearly, what the government didn't want and why they vetted just hardliners except for two reformers who they thought wouldn't have much, popularity or ability to get votes. What they really don't want is to see a repeat of last time around. The protest movement was brutally crushed. It is still alive, but it's underground. And many, many people are in prison. Many journalists, many bloggers are in prison. The Iranian regime denied many of us visas to go in. They chose very carefully which reporters they would allow to go in. And that's the way it is. You know, they're trying to control it, but they won't be able to. They won't be able to control everything about it.
Christian Amanpour, chief international correspondent for CNN and global affairs anchor for ABC News. Thank you so much for giving us some time today. I really appreciate it. And I certainly understand your main point on Syria, that we don't know yet whether this is arming the rebels or what it really is. So we'll have to wait for President Obama to come out. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Your questions answered on the new Outer Borough Cab plan from Mayor Bloomberg, which has now been approved by a court and should actually begin this summer. Stay with us.